broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And a very pleasant good evening, wherever you are. Good morning, and welcome to the only talk show in the world that knows what it's talking about. A show that goes places other talk shows wish they could but can't. A show that is for patriots by patriots. And a show that continues lockstep into the future with you, with I, with all of us together, so that we, you, me, her, she, it, all of them. We need the boot marching, bud.
Oh.
You, me, her, she, it. Hurry up, bud. You, me, it, sure, she. Thank you. God, man.
I forgot.
You forgot. Anyway, we do have on the line with us Dr. Jim Sadler. And Dr. Sadler, how you doing?
Good, Phil. How are you?
Hold on. You're not up yet. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. And tonight, the debt ceiling bill passes the House. Even Representative Gabrielle Giffords voted. We're going to talk with special guests, Representative Emery, Professor Emery Clayton, Dr. Ron Turner, and Larry Grover. And Dr. Jim Sadler joins us in just a moment to discuss how the recession is affecting doctors. After all, one of the first things that we talked about when President Obama was sworn in, after he was sworn in, one of the very first conversations we had, you remember? It was the health care bill. And the debt ceiling so-called crisis wasn't even entering our minds in those days. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation we'll have in just a moment with Dr. Jim Sadler. Our affiliate spotlight tonight is on KTLK and KFI, both of them in Los Angeles, our flagship stations in L.A., and WBXY in Gainesville, Florida. Three great radio stations on the Phil Hendry Show radio network. Phil Hendry medical update here. Went back to the doctor today. I got another antibiotic. I still have a infected throat. It doesn't seem to be anything more than that. And the doctor for the first time said to me, you know, Phil, you had pneumonia a year and a half ago. You're still at risk. I said, I quit smoking. It doesn't matter. We got to get past just a few more months past this. And he's very busy. So I think there's a lot of colds going on this summer. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether I'm trying to be funny when I say, you know, the Chinese and the Indians in Toronto, but I don't know. Maybe all of the travel that all of us do, we're spreading some stuff around. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. On the line is Dr. Jim Sadler in San Diego, California this evening. And we watched our elected representatives today dealing with a situation, whether it was a crisis, whether it was a crisis that was only in the minds of some, whether it was in fact a crisis only recognized by some. Whether we have enough money, whether we don't have enough money, whether we're going to get our credit rating downgraded, whether we would or we wouldn't, I don't know. But with me here is Dr. Jim Sadler. And as I said, Dr. Sadler, at the outset, the health care bill.
I heard that was a very good point that you made, Phil.
The discussion of the health care.
It was the very first thing that was discussed by the president, and it was the very first thing that was discussed, I think, in earnest by the American people, the United States Congress, and that was the health care bill. And how much it was going to cost, how much money we have, how much money we don't have, and what it was going to mean to the American people. And I think that that's a very good point you made, because it was the touchstone, the beginning of what eventually became an enormous discussion, Phil, of the finances here in the United States.
So so-called Obamacare passed with a great many changes. There's no public health option. It was very interesting. I was talking with my ex, Maria, and she was talking to me about her son and one of my employees, terrific kid, Alex. And we were discussing health insurance. I'm at a place right now where I can actually get health insurance for my employees. I don't have that many. We are in a position where we've been offered a health plan that I think could work.
Well, that is terrific. If you can do that, Phil, that's terrific.
But here's the thing. He was looking into it, and he was looking into this insurance exchange. I'm assuming that's what it was, because he found an enormous number of plans that he had a very difficult time working his way through?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know how what you mean by that. If you mean that there's so many options out there that we can't, I don't know. I'm a doctor, so I take care of my own health. But Obama, I think, Phil, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Obama has hurt a lot of the middle class with this stimulus package and the resulting high unemployment. And
well, I'm just saying that the, this was what he was looking at. He saw a whole lot of different plans. He's not really sure what to choose. He was very confused. I said, well, are they affordable? He said, yeah, there's a lot of them that are very affordable. A lot of them have a very low deductible. He's got one now that isn't that good. So what I'm saying is I had an opportunity to take a look at a couple of health care plans, insurance plans, I should say, for my employees. So things maybe are easing to that extent.
Well, if they're easing to that extent, and this is what I wanted to talk to you. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think people, Phil, are still having a difficult time paying their medical bills, still having a very difficult time paying their medical insurance. If you would ask the question right now on your phone lines, how many of you people out there are still having a difficult time paying for your health insurance? I have no doubt. I have no doubt at all that there would be an enormous number of people. And I see it in my own business.
I was going to ask you, are people paying on time? Are they coming in with
people who do not have insurance, and there are a significant number of those who are just paying themselves. They are more and more late with their payments. More and more are sending in partial payments. And even those people who do have insurance plans that I don't recognize or are very difficult to deal with for my office staff, we don't get paid on time by a lot of these insurance carriers, Phil.
And really? This is a big problem?
I don't want to say it's a big problem, but I'm noticing that...
Is this a problem that is the result of the insurance company itself or of your staff?
I don't think it's of my staff. My staff is very competent.
All right, I understand that. I'm just curious.
My staff is very competent, and I don't think that I would... I don't want to go there. I don't think it has anything whatsoever to do with my staff. I think it has to do with the Obamacare insurance companies. A lot of them, in my opinion, fly by night. A lot of them, I wouldn't... you say that your nephew or...
He's my stepson.
Your stepson has a large, potpourri of insurance companies. I believe that when I see it.
What are you doing then to dealing with people who are paying late? Are you giving them the grace period? Are you finding yourself sort of stuck in the middle as the doctor who wants to heal people? You also need to get paid.
Well, that's exactly it, Phil.
You want to get paid, but you don't want people to be turned away.
I'm not going to turn anybody away. I'm a doctor. I took a Hippocratic oath. People that are not paying on time, I want to help them. But you have to understand, I'm a human being. And when someone doesn't pay me on time, it affects my business. It affects my ability to pay my staff. It affects my ability to do business. It certainly affects my ability to help other patients that I may give a very large discount to, for instance. And so, therefore, I may get very angry. I might have feelings that I have to deal with. And that is my biggest problem. It isn't really the fact that my business is threatened, although that's a big problem. The biggest problem, Phil, is feeling that I'm being taken advantage of.
But people are not taking advantage of you.
Not in any overt sense, no. But they know that when they're late paying, and they give me a story, and they always are going to, this is what happens when you're in business, and you have someone that owes you money, they give you a story.
It's not always a story. I mean, everybody's having a hard time making payments on time.
Are you? Are you late with your bills?
I am not a big employer, okay? I don't have a large staff like you.
Well, all right, so I do have a large staff. And I need to express to my patients, I can't walk in and say, you're late with your payment. I don't want to treat you until you pay me because you're making me angry. So I have found some things that are simple. I've shared these with other doctors. I've shared these with other health practitioners. These are ways of taking off stress and ways that you can deal with these problems and feel better.
So what are we talking about here, Doc? We're talking about...
We're basically talking about dealing with stress in the environment of a healthcare practice where you're not getting paid on time.
Okay.
I can give you an example.
Give me one example, and then we're going to take a break.
Well, this is what a lot of times I will do if someone is in an examining room, and I know there's someone that has been paying late. I will walk over to the door and pretend like I'm opening it so they can hear the door handle rattle. And then I will say something like, oh, really? Is there something? And then I'll walk away. I'll come back maybe 5 minutes later, open the door partially with the door handle, then close it again and leave. And
so what is that about? I mean, it sounds to me like are you...
Well, I'm getting back a little of what they put me through. And yet I am not coming up to them and saying, you are not paying me. You know, I'm not humiliating them that way.
But you're attempting to irritate them?
What I'm attempting to do is to... I'm trying to get back a little of the emotional energy that I put out worrying about whether they're going to pay me or not.
Well, what you're doing, though, is irritating them.
If you want to call it that.
I mean, if you walk up to a door, it sounds to me like the person's in the examining room.
Yes.
And you rattle the door handle.
Yes, and then I leave, and then I come back and partially open it, then close it. Then I come back, and I pretend like I'm taking the chart out of that that sleeve that they have in the door, and the people will anticipate that I'm going to come in. Then I put the chart back in, and then I leave again. And what I'm doing is I'm exacting a little bit of emotional payback, yes, for what I've been put through.
Boy, these are very weird times.
Phil, weird times demand some, if you forgive me, weird action.
And no, these are some, these times are so strange. All right, we're going to be back here. We're going to take a break. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here. With me is Dr. Jim Sadler on the emotional toll that people not paying on time is taking on doctors and what he's doing to get back, as he calls, get back some emotional payback. Now, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, if you've had similar experiences, or you want to talk to Dr. Sadler tonight, 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-7445. Dr. Jim Sadler joining us as we talk here about the hardships that doctors, I mean, there's all kinds of people experiencing hardships, Jim.
Well, Phil, there's no question about that. There's no question about that.
But I'm not saying that you don't have a right to complain either. I mean, doctors, everybody.
First of all, the thing that I would say more than anything about doctors and about what we face, we're going to treat people that are sick. We're going to treat people that are not well. There's no question to that. I'm not going to turn someone away. I took a Hippocratic oath that I take very seriously. And I am simply saying that the Hippocratic Oath that I take seriously, I will take seriously all the way down the line.
But when you say you take a Hippocratic Oath seriously and then you want to exact some kind of revenge.
Well, no, I didn't use the word revenge.
Well, you said an emotional payback.
I want to equalize the emotional trauma that is being done to me. When I have to worry about whether someone's going to pay me, and they don't pay me. you can walk into the room there, and you can sit down with the patient, and you don't have to say to them, oh, you know, you're not paying me. You can simply say to them, for instance, if you're looking at the chart, you can say, an intake of breath is what I call it, as if you're looking at something that's shocking on the chart. And,
but that's utterly cruel, you know.
Well, it's also utterly cruel not to pay me on time. There's nothing wrong with them. I would never do that to someone that was really ill. If someone was really ill and I saw that, I would go, but I would tell them what's wrong with them. For someone...
So in other words, you're giving a sound of shock or horror.
I wouldn't call it horror, but I'm looking at their chart and I'm pretending as if I see something wrong physically, and I'll go, Jesus, something like that. And naturally, they say, what's wrong, doctor? And I'll say, excuse me. And then you leave, and you can come back and mess with the door handle and go back out. You hush tones.
Aren't you putting somebody through some very, very seriously traumatizing, a very traumatic emotional episode there? You know,
well, Phil, understand something. We're in a recession where I don't know whether I'm going to be able to pay my staff. I mean, I can pay my staff. I don't have a problem paying my staff. But still, when you're in a recession, I think it's fair to say I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay my staff, even though I know I can pay my staff, because the economic times demand this, you see. So,
but can you pay your staff?
I'm sorry, Phil, say that again.
Can you pay your staff?
Yes.
So you have no problem paying your staff?
I have no problem paying my staff, no. But when someone is late,
So somebody being late with their payment is no big thing?
Excuse me, Phil, but yes, it is a big thing, because they've made a commitment to pay me, and now they're late paying me. You understand? So when someone is late paying me, then I'm going to say... Then I'm going to be worried that I'm not going to get paid, and then they pay me. You understand what I'm saying?
You're worried they're not going to pay you, then they pay you, and you've already gone, you know, you've already put them through these emotional the episodes.
What I've done is I've simply looked at, I'll do something like I'll take their blood pressure, I'll look at the blood pressure, and I'll say, oh my God, you know, I'll say, not oh my God, I won't say that, I just won't say anything.
And so you're trying to worry them. You're trying to upset them.
As they have upset me and worried me, yes. Yes.
Okay, but I don't know how much they worry you and upset you to the point where you go outside, you mess with the door handle, you come back, mess with the door handle, come back again, you pretend like you saw something shocking on their chart.
You're doing this, Phil, so that people don't go, I've got a term that I use. It's called, I call it going road.
And going what?
Going road.
Can you spell that?
R-O-A-D. When someone goes road on me, that means that someone is trying to jump off the bus, so to speak, and, you know, get off, run away. They're trying to go road. They're trying to get on the road and run away. And when I have someone go road on me, then I'm going to have to do something to get them back on the flatbed truck, as I call it. It's a flatbed, and I see my patients as all being on this flatbed, and I'm driving it. And when they go road, I got to get them back.
So you, I don't know what you mean by any of this. So you scare them, and you say to them the things that you've said to them. I'm going to take a phone call, 877-876-PHIL. Gloria in Los Angeles, go ahead, please.
Yes, I just think your doctor's a sociopath. And the definition of a sociopath, I have it right in front of me, is someone who behavior is aggressive.
Well, I know what a sociopath is, ma'am. I know what a sociopath is, and I can assure you I'm not that at all.
Someone who's aggressively antisocial, like you're talking over me right now.
Well, you're not telling me anything I don't know, so why should I listen?
Well,
you know?
The listeners might want to be enlightened, sir. But you're talking
I'm the doctor. I'm the doctor, so
and
I know more about it than you do.
Why don't we let the caller say what she wants to say?
Okay,
I just think that if you are a doctor,
you are wrong.
Oh,
you're wrong.
Will you let the lady finish?
Thank you for admitting I'm a lady, sir. Now, the lady is saying that the gentleman who is a doctor... took a hit of
yes.
Oh, which means
yes, I did.
You are.
Yes.
You are.
Yes.
Bound.
Yes.
To.
Yes, I am.
Administer this oath with or without money, hoping that you.
No, I don't. I don't administer the oath. The oath was already administered.
The point is, you don't take the oath to upset people.
Well, in front of you, you'll see the Hippocratic Oath that I think you've administered, right?
Hold on for a minute. Gloria, hold on. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Call her lady.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And with us is Dr. Jim Sadler from San Diego as we talk about different businesses dealing with this economy. And for you, Dr. Sadler, some of the ways that you say you are equalizing the emotional toll, that your patients put on you by not paying on time. It sounds like you're trying to torture them.
Come on, Phil.
What else do you call it? I mean, why can't you go up to somebody and say, you know something, you didn't pay me on time. I'm very disappointed. I need to get this money.
Because I took a Hippocratic oath not to treat people. And
but did you take a Hippocratic oath to torture them?
Oh, I'm not torturing them. I'm walking up to the door. I'm opening it as if I'm going inside. They get all excited, and then I close the door.
Let me go back to Gloria. We'll get a couple of phone calls in here tonight. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Gloria in Los Angeles. Go ahead, ma'am.
Does that not meet the definition of being aggressively antisocial, which would be the definition of a sociopath?
No. It does not, because a lot of people are aggressively antisocial. A lot of people are aggressively antisocial and still have emotions. A sociopath has no emotion. A sociopath has no ability to feel empathy.
Okay, well,
I certainly do.
I feel victimized by this person's
yes.
behavior, but
in some
I'm
ways.
Sorry. A lot of us feel victimized in America right now, and we still have to conduct ourselves with class and couth and understanding that we have a job. And your job, sir, is to be a doctor. No?
My job is to be a doctor, but not for free. I don't see, is there something that says you work for free? Of course not.
Are you taking advantage of the United States of America as a free country that you would not be able to have the same privileges and rights as a citizen anywhere else on the planet? And you want to
I could be a doctor in Canada. I could be a doctor in England. I could be a doctor in many countries.
But you should, because here we're suffering.
But in America, we don't work for free.
Doctor, hold on, Dr. Sadler.
Where you can work for the government.
Well, no, I'm going to ask people to pay. For instance, if Gloria came to me, which I'm sure she wouldn't, but let's say she did, and she didn't pay me on time, I'm not going to torture you, Gloria. I'm not going to come to you and say I'm not going to treat you. Of course I'm going
to
treat you.
Close it and do what you did to your other patient and call yourself a decent doctor, no?
Why, and I want to just say something here, Dr. Sadler. When you say to a patient, when you go like that and you scare them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on, will you? I don't understand what you mean.
You're purposefully trying to scare them by looking at their chart.
Yes, but there's nothing wrong with them. I would not do that if there was something really wrong with them, you see. So Gloria would think this is bad. And all I would do with Gloria is I'd look at her
Anyone
chart and say, oh, my.
Anyone would think it was bad.
But there's nothing wrong with you, Gloria. And
she doesn't know that, though.
I don't know that.
She does.
If I looked at your chart, Gloria, and I went, oh, my God, and I steadied myself as I walked out of the room, you wouldn't think that was a joke?
Sir, you need to go back to church or synagogue and find your faith and walk in it.
Phil, I asked the lady a question.
It's a stupid question, Dr. Sadler, with all due respect.
What is stupid about it?
If you looked at her chart and you said, oh, my God, and steadied yourself walking out of the room.
Wouldn't she think that was a joke?
Obviously not.
No.
Why would... Well, you're laughing now, so that proves that you're
No, the truth. I wouldn't think it was a joke. Absolutely not, sir.
If I took your blood pressure and I said, and I didn't say anything to you, and I ignored you if you asked me. And I'm trying to see what scares people and what doesn't. And
well, go experiment on somebody else. Gloria, thank you very much for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL.
That woman said something to me, walk in my faith. Now, that is a term that is being used these days by a lot of the Christian, by the Christian Judeo, you know, whatever you want to call it.
The Judeo-Christian are ethic. You mean Jews and Christians?
Yes, Jews and Christians. They say, walk in your faith. Well, I am walking in my faith. I'm walking in my faith, and if I have to walk on someone's faith, as in F-A-C-E, but I'm lisping, and it's a joke, but you don't get the joke. And
why are you telling me jokes in the middle of saying that if people don't pay you on time?
Bill, a lot of people think doctors are people they can stiff. A lot of people think doctors are the guys you pay last on the list. A lot of people think that doctors are the guys that you say, I'll get to you next year. Well, guess what? No, we're not. We're people you have to pay. And
this is the problem we're having in our country right now. Healthcare is a necessary thing. And
oh, it's necessary. Then why am I the last guy on the list? And when I look at a chart and I go, holy Christ, and I get up and I walk out of the room and I sound like I'm crying. And
you're putting that person through torture. You're emotionally torturing them just so you can, quote, get back at them, as you put it. Here is Paul on the Phil Hendry Show. Paul, go ahead.
Hey, Phil, this guy you got on your show really needs to get some seriously mental help. For first of all, doctors get paid thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars by the insurance companies. Second of all, people that have...
Oh, really? Do they? And the person doesn't have insurance, then what? What do we do if they don't have insurance?
By federal law, you are required to treat them.
And oh, so I'm getting paid thousands and thousands of dollars, huh?
The only thing is, you take the Hippocratic Oath so serious.
In other words, I don't get paid.
I know the Hippocratic Oath. To torture any patient.
So I don't get paid, though. We got past that, okay? When you were talking about thousands and thousands of dollars, you recognized that you were wrong.
You need to honestly lose your medical license. And
you know what, sir? You'd be the guy. I would never torture my patient. I would never torture my patients. You, I would.
What do you mean, you, I would?
This guy. Just because he's giving me lip. Because a lot of people will do that.
Until times get better.
Sue me for what? Because I made you cry?
If you were to look at my chart and act like there was something seriously wrong with me and there was nothing wrong with me, I would sue you until times get better.
Wait a minute. What do you mean act like something seriously wrong? You may look at me and you may think you're acting wrong and all I did was twitch an eyebrow or lift a finger or scratch myself. And
well, then that doesn't look like there's something seriously wrong.
Okay, but I don't know what this guy's going to sue me for. He may sue me because I'm scratching, you know, some area that he's offended by. So what I have to do...
This guy's only going to see, he said he'd sue you, and I think rightfully so. If you attempted to injure him emotionally by looking at his chart and going, or, oh my God, or holy Christ, or steadying yourself as you walked out of the room, or any of these other things that you mentioned...
I made a joke when I walked out of the room on one lady, and I made it sound like I was throwing up. And the reason why I made it sound like I was throwing up is I told her, I hope I don't find a tumor, right? So when the test came back and she was negative, I went, excuse me for a minute. I went outside, I threw up. She didn't have a tumor. Do you understand? You understand the difference? I don't think so.
The difference is, you're saying you take the Hippocratic Oath serious. You take your job serious. Guess what?
Yes.
You are sitting here and telling a bold-faced lie. There's nothing in the Hippocratic Oath that gives you the right to torture a patient.
How did I tell a lie? I didn't say she had a tumor. I went outside and threw up.
You did throw up.
I mean, I pretended like I was throwing up. But I didn't tell her she had a tumor.
No, what you did was you worried that woman.
All right, and again, I say to you and to your callers, they worry me when they decide they're going to stiff me because I'm the doctor... And I'm the guy that they get to step.
If you're more concerned about the money than the well-being
millions
of
people.
Society, if you're more concerned about money than human society, You're in the wrong profession, and you need to live your life.
Are you? Aren't you? You're more concerned about money than human society. How come I'm the last guy to get paid?
I am a small business owner, okay, myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
what kind of business?
I have clients that all the time or right now having a hard time paying me. I am not.
Well, what kind of business are you in?
I'm not sending them threatening calls. I'm not sending them harassment emails or whatever you may say to do. You know what?
Well, I don't know what kind of business you're in, so I don't know if you're telling me the truth or not. What kind of business are you in?
I'm in the event management business.
Oh, that's real. Are you kidding me? Nobody needs that.
But what do you mean nobody needs that? He needs it, and he's got a business.
Yeah, but I mean you're going to start sending out demand letters.
My clients consist of health care hospitals, children hospitals, children that are dying of cancer, children that are dying of major diseases because they can't afford to get the health care in this country to get actually cured.
Are you telling me that you manage events? Like, what do you have, a concert for kids that got cancer, and then the band doesn't pay, and then you send a letter to... I don't understand.
The man's got a business just like, listen, thank you very much for your call, Paul. I appreciate it. Thank you for the... That man said he's not sending out, in these very difficult times, letters...
He said he was in the event management business.
Right, event management.
What is that?
He probably provides security. Maybe he provides the... I don't know. He provides those things for events. Maybe he manages the event to the extent that the promoter needs him to, whoever is promoting.
Well, what's a promoter? See, you don't even know.
I don't need to know. The point is he has a business like anybody else, and because people are not paying him on time, he's giving them a little bit of a grace period. That's what's going on these days, you know.
Well, let me ask you something. Are you giving people a grace period?
My business, if people don't subscribe, they don't subscribe. If they don't want to pay, all they have to do is cancel their subscription. If they want to pay, then they subscribe. I mean, I don't have to hassle people. You know, either they do or they don't. It's people decide. My business is an entertainment business, a voluntary thing. What do you think I'm doing here? You think I'm giving out, you think I provide water and power?
Well, I mean, you're doing, the radio.
This is not a utility. People do whatever they want.
Well, I'm not a utility.
But you provide health care, and so therefore, some people, see it as necessary.
Oh, I see. Some people see it as necessary, and so therefore, Dr. Jim Sadler takes it, and excuse my language, Phil, but I've got to take it where you usually, I don't know how to put this, where you usually sit on the toilet. And
I understand what you're saying. You think you're getting screwed.
I'm not only getting screwed, but I feel that I'm being taken advantage of to the point that were it a physical act, there would be blood.
All right, I hear what you're saying. But you're getting your payback. That's the other thing that you're saying.
What do you mean, my payback?
This guy is a beautiful thing because he just got done telling me that if people don't pay on time, he's going up to the door, he's opening it and then closing it. He looks at the chart and he goes, oh, my God, and walks out of the room. I mean, this cat has probably put, I bet you this guy has caused heart attacks. Heart attacks. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Back with Dr. Jim Sadler in a moment of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
So what about this debt deal? What about this debt ceiling deal today? Well, we're going to talk about it with Professor Emery Clayton, Dr. Ron Tarner, and we'll also have Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County coming on the line with us next hour to discuss the vote today, at least in the House, and I believe that the vote is tomorrow in the United States Senate. And also we'll talk about the return of Gabrielle Giffords to the House of Representatives. I can't imagine, no matter what the political persuasion, of the individual. You have to be proud of her, at least, and look at this young lady who was gunned down while holding a Congress on your corner. I mean, nothing could be more American, and nothing could be more Saturday morning-esque and in a shopping center. I mean, that's just, it's like, that's America. All right, 877-876, Phil, Dr. Jim Sadler on the line with us. And
so I want to say something. In the middle of all of this contention, you and I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you.
I think that, you said thank you. You're not the one that...
No, I know, but I thank you for agreeing.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want... I couldn't agree with you more. I thought it was brave of that young woman. I think we're all very proud to see an American representative in the United States Congress, where we send our representatives, that we send a person of such quality, a person of such courage and of such quality. And again, here is another example of how I don't live in Arizona. I live in California. Had I been living in Arizona, I might have had an opportunity to treat Representative Giffords, but I didn't get that opportunity. I'm here. There's a doctor in Arizona who got that opportunity. I would dare say that man gets paid on time. I think it sounds probably selfish of me. And
well, I don't think that's something we want to... Do you really want to... Do you want this conversation to go there? You know...
Go there.
Does he get paid on time? The doctor that treated Gabrielle Giffords.
Yes. Do you think he gets paid on time? I think the answer to that question is yes, he does. Yes, he does. Do I get paid on time? No, I don't. Why don't I get paid on time? It could be. I don't know. It could be because I didn't operate on a United States Congresswoman who had just taken a gunshot to the head. It could be.
I think that's really cynical, you know.
What are you talking about? Why is that cynical?
Well, are you saying that you wish you'd worked on something that high profile?
I'm saying that I wouldn't have to be on your program talking about walking into a room partially, then closing the door, walking into the room partially, closing the door to make the person nervous inside and thinking that I'm coming in to treat them and I'm not, so I can exact an emotional revenge on them because they don't pay me on time. I wouldn't have to do that. And I wish, Phil, that you and your listeners this evening had some basic, raw level of human emotion. And, boy, it stuns me that...
That what? That I don't have sympathy?
That you don't have more sympathy.
I have sympathy for anyone that is working and struggling with a business where the accounts receivable and the accounts payable, it just ain't happening. I get it. But to as a doctor, to torture patients by standing outside the door and mumbling something, oh, boy, that's really bad on their chart, just to make them nervous so you can exact an emotional toll, a revenge, which I know you don't want me to say that.
No, I do not want you to say it. It's evening. It's an emotional evening out.
Well, whatever you want to call it, I think is wrong. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Here is Mike. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
How you doing, Phil?
Good.
I was just calling because, I'm listening to this guy, and I can understand where he's coming from about wanting to get paid and being upset about it, but his reaction to it, to me, seems pretty juvenile, considering. And the reason why is because, you know, let's just say he wasn't paying his... I'm not saying he isn't, but let's just say he wasn't paying his taxes or he couldn't pay all of his taxes because of stuff that's going on like this with his business. And somehow the cops and the fire department get wind that this guy that's calling them to his house for whatever they need, whether it's, you know, he's got a theft or a domestic dispute, and they know he's not paying his taxes, so they're not getting their money.
Oh, boy. Is this going to take long?
You going to cut in like that, buddy? Well, my question
I'm just asking, is this going to take long, that's all.
Would you let the man finish?
If they decide that they're going to take their sweet time getting to your house, or, you know, maybe give you a hard time when they get there, even though you're the one that called them because you had a problem. Is that fair to you? Where does this stop? Don't you think this is going to...
You just proved that being a doctor is the same as being a fireman and a policeman, and therefore we should be paid as a utility, if you will, or a public service. You just proved it. Thank you.
No, I'm not... Listen,
thank
I'm
you.
Not
thank you very much.
I'm not saying you should be
okay.
Paid.
A lot of people think we ought to get stiff.
You're not hearing me. I totally agree that you should be paid. However,
Okay.
If the police or fire department take their sweet time coming to you because you're not paying your taxes, which pays their money, then that's going to be...
I'm not saying... Well, no, you missed my point. I didn't say I'm taking my sweet time. I didn't say I'm not operating on people or providing them with... I'm not saying I'm not providing them with medical service. I didn't say that at all. So it's not a fair analogy to say that the cops are taking their time. I'm not taking my time.
It's fair. It's fair for
no, it's not.
All I'm doing is
giving them a little bit of a ribbing because they're cheap.
And because they're cheap, or maybe they just can't afford it. Maybe it's a mother that just doesn't have.
Oh, here we go with the mother. If I,
what's wrong with that?
You know, you guys always use that example so that I've got no moral high ground to stand on because I'm stiffing some mother someplace. I'm saying. It is not a big price to pay if someone is slow paying me that I walk in and I say, oh, my God, look at this chart, and then I walk out. Big deal. And I think Mike agrees because he's not saying anything. So he recognizes.
I don't know if I'm still on or not.
Yeah, you're still on. Oh, how are you? You are on, that's for sure.
Well, this is my point. The cops and the firemen wouldn't do that because of law.
Hurry up.
Phil Hendry.
Too late.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. During our break, we just had a little bit of Gabrielle Gifford on the Phil TV video feed, and she was introduced today. And like I said during the break, as I said to Dr. Sadler, I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. That was a beautiful thing to see the lady show up and to see courage like that from one of our elected representatives. We're going to be talking this hour, though, about the debt ceiling bill and the fact that Representative Gabrielle Giffords voted. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. If you're watching our Phil TV feed, there is Gabrielle Giffords there again waving and receiving some of the applause. I think that's Brad Sherman rants standing next to her, that pain in the ass. I mean, that very nice guy that we know from the Valley. So anyway... what, bud?
Yeah, he's the man from the Valley.
Yeah, I know, the representative from the Valley. So the debt ceiling bill passes the House, and, and even Gabrielle Gifford showed up to vote. We'll talk with special guests Professor Emery Clayton, Dr. Ron Turner, and Larry Grover coming up here. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget our Phil TV is on philhendryshow.com. That's our website. That is the strong right arm of the Phil Hendry Show. You can go over and pick up a backstage pass and take a look at all that we have to offer, including thousands and thousands, and I mean literally thousands of hours of radio that you will not hear anywhere else, world-class radio, funny as hell. You'll die. You'll split your sides. You'll strangle. In fact, our radio show at times is so funny, it cures things. It literally can. I believe it can cure cancer.
You can't say that.
Well, I just did say it. How about that? I just did say it.
No, but I mean, the people are going to call up.
What are they going to call it? Well, they know I'm joking, sort of, but hey, what if it does cure cancer? Am I supposed to go back and then say, oh, it really does cure cancer, and they wouldn't let me say it?
Well, no, but you better not.
All right, it doesn't cure cancer. 877-876-PHIL. Professor Emery Clayton joining us from L.A. Canyon College. Professor Clayton, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm very well, and I'll tell you this much. If your program can cure cancer, then... even at some point, if it does not cure cancer, I think it was worth saying it and getting the word out there. Maybe you cure one or two people, but nonetheless, I think speaking well on behalf of ourselves is very, very important. And I say that having seen what happened in Congress today.
Let's talk about this, Professor Clayton. And Professor Clayton is a professor of urban studies at L.A. Canyon College. The House of Representatives decisively passed a bill tonight to raise the nation's debt ceiling, capping months of negotiations between House Republicans and President Obama. And Representative Gabrielle Giffords of Arizona made her first appearance on Capitol Hill since being shot in her district in January. She voted in support of the deal that would raise the debt ceiling. A tweet from her office account as the vote was starting said, Gabrielle has returned to Washington to support a bipartisan bill to prevent economic crisis. Congressional leaders breathed a collective sigh of relief today after convincing members of Congress to support the deal, which was made public only on Sunday night, to raise the nation's $14.3 trillion debt limit and avert U.S. default. Your feelings?
Well, I think my feelings are very clear. I think I agree with a great many Americans this evening when I say that I'm grateful for the vote. I'm also a little bit disappointed, and I will say that I have been disappointed from the very beginning. When I look at that faction of the Republican Party that we have called the Tea Party, that they have self-described as the Tea Party, I'm disappointed, Phil, from this standpoint. I'm disappointed because here is a young woman suffering from the possible brain damage, a young woman who took a bullet through her head. And I don't want to overly dramatize the events of January. I think we're all very familiar with it. But here's a young lady that took that bullet, and a young woman that could very well be suffering from some kind of brain damage. Perhaps it has slowed her thinking. Perhaps it has affected her intellect on some level. I don't know. Perhaps we may not know for a long time. Perhaps it has caused her to have a difficult time quantifying, or logically analyzing things. And yet, this young woman voted on behalf of the debt ceiling raising. How do you feel if someone with brain damage can vote for this bill and you're a Tea Party member and you can't? How does that make you feel?
Well,
no, hold on for just a minute. I want to let that sink in. I want to let that sink in. If you could.
You want to let what sink in?
I want to let it sink. When I ask the question, Phil, and I'm asking the Tea Party people that are listening tonight, a young woman suffering from a level of brain damage can vote for this bill, and the Tea Party can't. You're a Tea Party member. How does that make you feel? Pause. Don't say anything. Well, I didn't want to say pause. Do you understand what I'm saying, Phil?
What are you saying?
I'm saying if you would not say anything.
You want some dramatic pause.
I want a dramatic pause, yes. Let me do it again. Listen to what I'm saying. A young woman with brain damage, a young woman who took a bullet through the head, that young woman who may suffer from any number of...
All right, we understand. Intellectual...
Excuse me? Mr. Henry, I have the floor. And
you are on my radio show, Professor. I understand what you're trying to say. A young woman who...
I want to, if you'll allow me, to present this the way I wanted to present it, if you'll allow me.
Go ahead, sir.
A young lady suffering... All right, I'll speed it up because you can't give me the common decency. A young lady... And
I apologize, but I do want to move the show along.
I understand that. A young lady who has lost... Where are my notes? God. A young woman who may have lost... You know, I got to tell you something. As an African-American male, I like to think that progress is made. But when things like this happen, I think the white man... And excuse me, I just think the white man's doing it on purpose.
I'm not doing anything on purpose.
Well, then how come I have to look?
I didn't know what you were saying. If you'd said to me before we came on the air, I want to do something, Phil. I want to set something up. You know.
Oh, yeah. If I'd said what do you want to hear, I'm going to rehearse this. This was a natural moment for me. It was a natural moment. A young lady. I'll
just do it. I mean, I'm not trying to stop you.
Well, then why did you jump in and go, can we, well, yeah, blah, blah, you know, you're all impatient. I'm trying to say something here.
I understand, Professor, that you're trying to say something. I apologize. Please, commence. I will not interrupt you.
Where are the notes? Thank you very much. Thank you. A young woman may have had her intellect affected, her ability to think logically, her ability to think linear, her ability to think in a peripheral manner, her ability to imagine as well as analyze and analyze in a discriminating fashion. All of this could be affected by that bullet that young woman took in January. And yet, even with brain damage, even brain damaged, Gabrielle Giffords went in and voted for that debt ceiling bill, and the Tea Party couldn't. If you're in the Tea Party, how does that make you feel?
Okay.
Oh, God!
I'm sorry.
See, this is what I mean. You are a white man. And
I'm sorry.
Well, it just then. Right then, I told you what I wanted to do, and you jumped in anyway.
I forgot, man. It took so long for us to get to it.
I forgot, man. Let me tell you something. You're not at some rib joint, all right? This is not some soul food. This ain't Deacon Burton's Grill. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Don't give me this man. I don't speak that hep jive. I'm a professor at an institute of higher learning, and I will be spoken to with respect.
I apologize, Professor. I lapsed.
Yes, well, see if there are now. You lapse, and what you do when you lapse, what do you think happens when you lapse? It means somebody lapped you. And when someone laps you, no, it has nothing to do with a dog with his tongue making you... I don't want to get into that. When someone laps you, I'm talking about in terms of auto racing.
They've lapped you, that means they're way ahead of you.
They're way ahead of you, exactly.
Well, I wasn't thinking about a dog.
Good. A young lady who got shot in the... I cannot emphasize, Phil, what happened to Gabrielle Giffords. She got shot. And it could have affected her ability to think intelligently. And yet, she walked into that chamber today and she voted for the debt ceiling bill. The Tea Party couldn't. How does that make you feel? Well, I guess you've got to say something, sir.
I don't know when.
How about now?
Very good, Professor. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the fact that Gabrielle Giffords, even with possible brain damage, was able to support this bill. So how does that make the Tea Party feel that you guys got, I guess, beat out in terms of smarts by a woman with brain damage? Our number is 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
You can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
I don't know who that man is. Who is that?
To call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, of course. And we're with Professor Emory Clayton, who is with the Urban Studies Department at LA Canyon College. We're going to bring on now Dr. Ron Turner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverton, Colorado. And Dr. Turner, how are you tonight?
Doing very well, Phil. Enjoying the conversation this evening, as always.
And we were talking here about...
I'd like to jump in with a comment, if I could.
Okay, Professor, go ahead.
He's causing problems, isn't
he? No, I'm not causing any problems. No, sir. I'm not causing any problems. No, sir. No. I wanted to ask Mr. Hendry... Well, never mind.
Go ahead, Professor.
I apologize. I shouldn't have said what I said. I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, forget it. Forget it. Never mind.
Well, sir, you're welcome to say what you want to say. I wanted to just give Dr. Turner a couple of minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. Just go ahead.
No, I insist, Bill. I'd like him to say what he wants to say.
Professor?
First of all, I'm a professor. I'm not a doctor. Secondly, never mind.
Come on, will you?
That starts to piss me off.
Oh, but I don't want to piss you off. All right, I'll say it. You got any other white people you want to bring on your show tonight, or this Dr. Turner the last one? And
oh, come on.
Well, hold your horses there, boy.
Boy! You call me boy?
No, hold on, hold on, hold on.
Yeah, you're going to have to apologize for that.
I heard that man call me boy. Okay?
It's a word I use. It's a word I use.
Yeah, just like that man used our baby, too. That's a word he uses.
No, hold on, hold on. I apologize. I say that to my son.
And, oh, yeah, I bet you do say that to your son. I heard this man call me boy. Now, I can tell you, sir, I may be a genteel, and I can assure you, a very genteel man. I'm a man of intellect, and I'm a man who engages in discussion, even when all else is lost. But I can assure you, had you said that to me in person, in your person, that you would not be standing right now, sir.
I would be, what, on all fours?
Did you just hear what...
Would you stop it with the jokes?
I don't know what he was talking about.
Did you hear what that cracker just said?
Cracker? Well, that right there, see, that shut... See, Phil...
All right, I got to put these guys on hold. I got boy, cracker. All I wanted to do was come on here and talk about the debt ceiling. The bill, the debt ceiling bill, the fact that Gabrielle Giffords voted. And these two guys, first of all, I'm going to say, I want them on one at a time, bud. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Bring on Dr. Tarner first. Dr. Tarner, you there?
This is Professor Clayton.
Hold on for a minute. Dr. Tarner, do you know what line he's on?
Yeah, I think I do.
Well, what line's he on?
Line.
Do you mean?
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
You don't do eeny, meeny, miny, moe. What line's he on? If he's not on that... excuse me. My voice is cracking, okay?
Yeah, a little bit.
What line's he on?
Eeny, meeny, miny.
You know, here. This one. Dr. Tarner, is that you?
No, this is Larry Grover.
What line's he on?
Well, you just did two of them.
I did two lines, okay?
Which ones?
I did one and three.
Well, which ones are lit up?
One, two, and three.
That must mean he's on line two.
Exactly. Dr. Tarner.
Oh, Emery Clayton.
Which line is he on?
You just used one, two, and three.
Well, are those the three guys there?
Phil, you sound really bad. You just went, are those the three guys there? You sound really gay.
Yeah, you sounded very feminine-like. Better drink some...
Get that out of my face. I don't want to drink that. There's three lines lit up there, and one of them is Dr. Ron Tarner. This one. Dr. Tarner.
Larry Grover.
This one. Dr. Tarner.
Emery Clayton.
This one. Larry Grover.
Nope. Yeah, this is Larry Grover.
I mean Ron Tarner.
Nope. Larry Grover.
What happened to Tarner?
He's on line three.
Dr. Tarner, is that you?
No, it's still Emery Clayton. You know, you got to get... You ought to pull your head out of your...
He must have hung up.
Uh-uh. Hold on. Dr. Tarner? Yeah, he's right here. Here, let me...
I can't talk to him on the phone. Put him on the air.
Dr. Tarner, I'm going to push you on the air. Yeah. Go ahead.
I tell it's Emery Clayton. What do you...
Okay, I give up. I give up, man.
What?
I give up. If you were just talking to him, I give up.
I had him on the line.
You had him on the line, huh? You were talking to... Let me have Emery and let me have Larry Grover.
This is Ron Tarner, Phil. I stepped away for the...
This is Ron Tarner.
Yes.
All right, Ron, will you do me...
What the hell is wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with you. Will you do me the favor of apologizing to Professor Clayton so that we can move on with this discussion?
I will attempt to do that.
Now get me Professor Clayton on the line, if you don't mind. Professor Clayton?
Yes, Emery Clayton.
Sir, would you do me the good service of accepting Professor Dr. Turner's apology... So that we can move on.
For you, Phil, I'll do it. If this was any other radio program, I can assure you I would have hung up by now, and you'd be getting a letter from my attorney forthwith.
Gentlemen, Professor Clayton is here.
Yes, Dr. Turner.
Let me say, Professor Clayton, that it was very inelegant and very boorish of me. I apologize wholeheartedly for using that term. I can assure you that I did not mean it in the sense, but I can understand how it was taken that way.
And I got the essence of it, thank you. I mean, it sounds like every other white man. And I would like to also apologize to you for calling you a cracker, even though you are.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, everybody feel better?
I, I'm fine.
Okay. We were talking about the Gabrielle Giffords vote today. It was the opinion of Professor Clayton that Gabrielle Giffords, even with brain damage, exhibited an intellectual ability that escapes the people in the Tea Party. Your feelings on that, Dr. Tarner?
Well, Phil, I have a little bit of a different feeling on this. I don't know whether or not Professor Clayton will agree, but I've been down this road before with Stephen Hawking. And, you know...
what does that mean, Stephen Hawking?
Well, I could tell you, Professor Clayton, I've known Stephen Hawking for a great many years. He's a grandstander. He is a glory hog. He loves to suck all the attention toward himself. He puts himself in those little motorized hover-around chairs, and he surrounds himself with hot-looking women, and he writes these ridiculous books because he cannot stand the spotlight not being on him. And I think that what we had today was a little bit of a Stephen Hawking moment. Oh, look at me. Aren't I special, even though I look like a pretzel? And I don't mean to...
I've got to admit that's pretty funny.
You know something? I don't think that's called for at all.
All right.
And not only that, it's not original either.
That's true. I did hear that, I think, on the... I think I heard that on the Bubba the Sponge show.
Bubba the Love Sponge.
Pardon?
Bubba the Love Sponge.
It's called Bubba the Love Sponge. Yeah, I heard the human pretzel. So that's not even an original line. Because I heard...
Okay, fine. You heard the human pretzel on Bubba the Love Sponge. What are you talking about anyway? You're listening to Bubba the Love Sponge?
I love Bubba the Love Sponge. I love him. Don't you ever say anything about Bubba the Love Sponge. I love that man like I love an old brother.
That's very unusual. I'll tell you one thing. Bubba the Love Sponge is a lot funnier than Hawking. Although Hawking is funnier than Lex and Luthor. Or whatever the hell her name is. Lex and Luthor.
Well, all right. I'm going to go nuts here in about 5 seconds. These guys are doing a review now of every morning show in America. We'll be back here with Dr. Ron Tarner, Professor Emery Clayton, and coming up next, Larry Grover from Citizens of the Conservatives of Kern.
What a mess.
Kern County, the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. We have with us here Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College. We also have with us from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado, Ron Tarner, Dr. Ron Tarner. And Larry Grover is going to join us here in a moment from Conservatives of Kern County as we continue to discuss. And I say that in the most broad of terms, discuss Gabrielle Giffords and, of course, the debt ceiling bill today. I don't think, gentlemen, and I say this with respect, I don't think we've come even close to discussing this situation today properly.
I wanted to say one thing here. I came on your program with the very best of intentions. When I heard this man, Dr. Tarner, who I appreciate very much, now he is saying to me, and he's trying to say to you, and he's trying to say to your audience, that Gabrielle Giffords came on the stage, if you will, of the Congress today in much the same manner that this man, Dr. Stephen Hawking, comes on stage as a self-aggrandizing handicapped person. Is that what you're saying, Dr. Tarner?
Well, you know... Never mind the fact that you had to remember what my title was. You went, Dr. Tarner, Joseph.
I didn't know what your title was. Sir, don't be so insecure, all right? I forgot momentarily. It's not that I don't know you're a doctor.
Well, it's like you were going to call me Professor Tarner.
No, I did not call you Professor Tarner, sir. Now, my question stands, sir. This lady, Gabrielle Giffords, today, you say she was grandstanding. That's exactly what you're saying. You say she was on a stage today. She was clowning out there and grandstanding and self-aggrandizing, I believe. Mr. Hendry used that term, and I think that's appropriate. Is that what you're saying?
You know, Phil, I can't stand talking to this coon. Canadian. I don't like...
Hold on a minute. What, did you just call me a coon?
No, I did not. I said Coonadian.
Hold on, wait.
No, you hold on.
both of you. I heard that man call me a coon.
No, sir, I said, I'm sorry, I said I can't stand talking to these Canadians.
And no, I didn't hear that at all. I didn't hear that at all, sir.
I didn't either. I heard coon.
No, I said Canadian, Canadians.
Why would you say Canadian?
Because I come from the northern plain states.
What does that mean? You come from the northern plain states. What does that mean?
Have you ever heard Lawrence Welk?
Have I ever heard who?
Lawrence Welk.
I don't know. I don't know who that. What? You made that cracker with a tuba?
What?
The cracker with a tuba.
Look, hold on. Let's calm down here for a moment. Lawrence Welk was the band leader.
I know who Lawrence Welk was. Lawrence Welk was that cracker with a tuba player, and he had a guy wearing a pork pie hat.
What are you talking about? Lawrence Welk was a beloved...
Well, I don't know who he was beloved. What about him?
Lawrence Welk came from North Dakota, and he talked like he had a speech impediment.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, I come from North Dakota, too. And while I have developed a much better speaking pattern because of the educational arenas that I've been in... And
whoa, hold the phone here. Lawrence Welk, hold on. Just for a minute, Phil, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Would you people shut up? Just shut. Take that buffet outside. Lawrence Welk. I know Lawrence Welk. All right. Talk like talk to me like you come from a foreign country. You're saying he didn't.
No, Lawrence Welk came from North Dakota. There's a lot of Germans. He said, I ended up...
I know how he talked. He talked like some man from Germany or something.
No, Lawrence Welk was from here.
Yeah, so I say Canadian.
You say Canadian?
Yes, sir, I do. And I didn't mean to say that. And this Boy Scouts understand that.
Whoa, you just called me boy. Now, you heard him call me boy. And
no, yes, I did. Now.
No, I said Boy Scouts understand that. I said Boy Scouts understand that.
Hold on for a minute.
I heard boy. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know where you work, but you can't be that far away from me. And even if I've got a crawl on my hands and knees...
Hold on for just a minute. Larry Grover, Larry, you there?
Yeah, Phil, I'm right here.
What did you hear?
Well, what do you mean, what did I hear? First of all, what I'd like to say is that I known I was being on a radio program with two idiots. Who are you calling an idiot?
Hold on, I've got the floor now. Two idiots.
Now, I'm listening to this guy, Boy Scout, Canadian, the other guy going nuts. I thought I was on here to talk about how Gabrielle Giffords got on the floor of the United States Congress today. And she wasn't on no floor. I didn't mean literally.
You mean in the...
Yes, in the... Oh, God. Oh, God. I got on a bed for this?
Hey, this is Larry Grover?
Yes.
I'm Dr. Rod Tarter. Did you hear me say this Boy Scout's attitude...
I heard you say this boy, and then I heard you think, oh boy, I just made a mistake, I better add scouts.
That's what it sounded like to me.
And that's what it sounded like to me.
Well, now I've heard it all. So you're calling me an inveterate racist,
and that's about right. I've heard you call me coon. I've heard you call me boy. I've heard you say that, you said boy, and another thing, didn't he say stove lid?
No, he did not. You know, first of all, Dr. Tarner, if you got a problem... talking to a man of color, then maybe we can...
No, I do not. You guys are really bigoted. You're bigoted against North Dakotans. North Dakotians.
And what do you mean, North Dakotians?
That's what I am. I'm from North Dakota.
And that's why you say Canadian and all that other jazz.
Right, yeah.
Oh, man, if you're lying to me,
I swear it.
Well, anyway, Phil, can I say something?
Go ahead, Larry.
It was Gabrielle Giffords today who was coaxed onto the floor of the House of Representatives in a most unseemly manner, Phil, because I've got it on good authority from one of Obama's staff members that he had to coax her into the House of Representatives with one of those pinwheels he got at Disneyland.
Oh, no.
What are you saying to me?
That's an out-and-out lie.
Oh, no. I swear, Phil, I wish I wasn't having to say this, but I'm...
And what are you saying?
I'm saying the only way they got her into the House of Representatives was to spin the little pinwheel and go, look, see, Gabby? Look, you can have it. And
get out of here. I can't listen to this.
Those are three very preeminent men. They're going to be mad.
Oh, well, am I going to be upset about that? Am I going to worry about that? No, I'm not going to worry about that. I got the one guy with boy. The other thing, and this whole thing about spinning a pinwheel. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break right now. We'll be back, and we will have Dr. Ron Tarner, Larry Grover, whoever stays with us. I don't blame any of them for hanging up, especially Tarner. I'm from North Dakota. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Oh, that was very scary. Hold on for a minute. What?
I said that was very scary. I did not appreciate what you had done on your broadcast. I was looking at your video cast.
Yeah, and what was scary?
You just had on Maxine Waters. I just saw her. Did you do that on purpose, or what did you do?
I've got C-SPAN. I flashed C-SPAN for a moment.
Well, what you flashed was Maxine Waters. And she's frightening. Frightening to look at, frightening to listen to. Now, I'm a progressive. Don't get me wrong. I'm very progressive. And I support a strong black woman in politics, especially Maxine Waters. I support a strong, tough, good African-American woman in the House of Representatives. And I would support Maxine Waters for the United States Senate. And I think that's where she's headed.
And you do?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
She could be. I mean, she could be. I think that California's going to put a Republican back in as a senator, but I think they'll keep a Democrat.
You think so, huh? Let me tell you something. I would support Maxine Waters. But all of that aside, when I look at her, I feel that if I'm in a marble hall or I'm in a room full of mirrors, that my life is at stake, that I may get a shard right through my groin, right into the femoral artery. You know,
why don't you speak English?
What?
Speak? What are you talking about?
If Maxine Waters showed up in the House of Mirrors, I'd get a shard through the groin. Now, figure that one out.
She'd break the mirrors?
Yes.
Well, aren't you a class act?
Well, I was trying to put it in a poetic way so I wouldn't have to explain it. But with you, Hendry, that's not possible now, is it? I've got to insult a beautiful, wonderful African-American woman. And
oh, you had to insult her. I forced you to, huh?
Well, you forced me to explain the joke.
The joke?
Yes.
She walks into the House of Mirrors. Where the hell is that?
I didn't say House of Mirrors, did I? I'm not talking about some fun zone. I ain't talking about where you hung out as a kid at the end of a pier in some funky fun zone with some needle freak putting kids into a roller coaster or on a Ferris wheel. Some tattooed up needle freak Hollywood hype. No, no, I'm not into that. No way. Now check this out. Boy, if this ain't a 1-2 punch, here I am talking up proud black women and I get Maxine Waters followed by Sheila Jackson Lee. Man, if that don't put the hurt on my vision.
Boy, I'll tell you something. You didn't want me to go with all the man stuff and...
I'll just talk the way I want to talk, all right? I'm a proud black man. I'll express myself in the colloquial way that I express myself sometimes when I don't want to lose my temper. I'm sitting here trying to support proud, strong black women, and I get Maxine Waters and Sheila Jackson Lee, a 1-2 punch of ugly... Like,
boy, you are, you know...
Man, that is a 1-2 punch of scary.
And I'd get a glass shard through the groin. Is that what I was hearing?
No, not you. Me.
All right, are we all done with insulting these women? Because
I did not insult these women.
Yes, you did. Are we all done? Because I want to get back to this discussion that we started here on Gabrielle Giffords, if you don't mind.
That's fine with me.
All right. First of all, Gabrielle Giffords, you say, walked into the, I don't know what, the House of Representatives, and she cast a vote even with the possibility of brain damage, even with the possibility of a decreased intellect, I think is the way you put it, even with the possibility of a damage to her ability to think logically in a linear fashion, blah, blah, blah.
No, not blah, blah, blah. The point that I was making was very well stated. and very well rooted. So it's not blah, blah, blah. Maybe it sounds like blah, blah, blah to you. Let me tell you something, Phil.
All right, but I understand.
No, hold on. Let me tell you something. What do you think when we say to a dog, if you say to a dog, here, Rover, here is your food, what do you think the dog hears?
I guess he hears here, Rover.
No, the dog hears blah, 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 blah. That's what the dog hears. I'm sorry. All right, what did you want to know?
Here's what I want to know. I want to know if Gabrielle Giffords had this decrease in intellect, as you say, or the possibility of that, and still casted a vote for the debt ceiling legislation, how do you know it was the correct vote? How do you know that the more intelligent vote, if you'll pardon me for saying this, was against that bill? You say it is reflective of a smart move, this young lady suffering from this terrible injury. How do you know it was the right move?
Now what you've done, Phil, is you've basically said Gabrielle Giffords is a retard. And
no, I have not said that at all.
Then why are you saying she cast the wrong vote?
I didn't say that. I said, how do you know?
I am assuming, because I'm a gentleman, that the fine young congresswoman from Tucson, Arizona, cast the correct vote. I'm a gentleman, and I'm also a very discriminating thinker, and I'm also, I believe, on the right side of history when I say that Gabrielle Giffords cast the correct vote and she did it despite her injuries. Now, dig your way out of that one. She cast the right vote. How does the Tea Party feel? How do you feel? How do you feel, Phil Henry?
I'm not Tea Party. I'm not Tea Party, and I'll tell you this. My question still stands.
Your question is wrong.
No, it's not wrong. It's not wrong at all. My question still stands. How is it that you're sure she cast the right vote? It's certainly a commendable thing that that woman showed up and cast the vote. It's a commendable thing that Gabrielle Giffords, showing courage and commitment to her country, showed up to cast that vote. It does not necessarily mean she cast the right vote. So how do you put those two together?
Let me tell you something. And now, what's this on? I'm looking at Phil TV, and I just looked at a bald white man with a red beard. Oh, Lord. And
I'm sorry. I thought that, let's take that out. That was on C-SPAN. I thought they were still showing some of the vote.
We already know what happened to the vote today, Phil. I don't think any of us need to fool around with that. I think we all know what happened. It passed. Now, Gabrielle Giffords passed the correct vote. I'm not willing to sit here on your program and say that that young woman was wrong. I'm not willing to sit here on your program and say that a woman, not a man, but a woman, stood up for democracy in America and took a bullet for it. She stood there like any of our young brave men and women in Afghanistan, Iraq. She stood there like any of our brave young men on the shores of Normandy Beach. She stood there like our brave young men at Khe Sanh or Danang Beach. She stood there like our brave young men in Belleau Woods in World War I. And she stood there like the 54th in South Carolina during the Civil War. Gabrielle Giffords, shoulder to shoulder with all of them people. You can hear my voice cracking. And I didn't say cracker. I said cracking.
I understand.
All right. Gabrielle Giffords stood shoulder to shoulder with every great American fighting man, every hero, every American that ever took a bullet and, yes, even died for their country. Gabrielle Giffords was right there. She's more of a man than 99% of these so-called men I'm looking at today. And you're telling me she cast the wrong vote? That woman should be awarded a Purple Heart. In fact, I think she should be awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor or whatever the highest award is that they give a civilian. What's that called, Phil? You know, the one they give to the civilian.
Presidential Citation of Freedom.
Bull crap. What's the name of
it? That's the name of it!
If you're lying to me...
What is it with you, man? It's the Presidential Citation of Freedom.
Well, then Gabrielle Giffords should get that. Gabrielle Giffords should get that. Presidential Citation of Freedom. A Silver Star. And a Purple Heart. Because let me tell you something. That woman took a bullet from an enemy of the United States. Just as bad as any Nazi, just as bad as any commie, just as bad as any Japanese kung fu BS, that Tojo, whatever the hell he was. Just as bad as that Ho Chi Minh. You know that guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. just as bad as that, all them Confederate, all that Johnny Rep bullcrap, all that. Just as bad as that Kaiser and that stupid-ass, whatever they call him, the Archduke or the, what do they call that guy?
Are you talking about World War One? I don't know.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm looking at a bunch of white guys in funny hats. What's the guy that...
Archduke, yes, of Austria.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Because when you get down to it, Phil, that's all America has ever done in wars, fought a bunch of white men in funny hats. Okay? And by God, if we've got to fight a whole bunch more funny-looking white men in funny hats, I'm there, front and center. I'll follow Gabrielle Giffords right through the gates of hell.
Well, now, wasn't that dramatic? Can we shut off this stuff, bud? Thank you.
Well, that was the House of Representatives and everything.
I don't give a crap. I've been listening to that through one ear. I got the noise that Emery Clayton is whatever he was.
I think it's like a tea.
A tea? A tea for what?
A tea for two.
Man, that's great. I love it.
Oh, that's really good.
That was perfect, tea for two. Yeah. Man, I give a five on that.
Yeah, that's great, bud.
Yeah. Tea for what? Tea for two.
Shut up. What a woman.
Sorry.
God, you're going to start screaming in here like you're in the middle of some kind of a coon hunt. Yes, I said coon.
I know you meant raccoon.
Okay. Don't start yipping it up in here, man, like you're, the hounds are onto one, okay, and you're just slogging through the swamp.
That's funny, though. You got to admit.
It wasn't that funny. It wasn't that funny at all. All right, well, there you go, our three gentlemen this evening, and I think what you heard were three very, the most disrespectful point of view by Larry Grover, the guy that I thought I was going to get more sense out of. The fact that Gabrielle Giffords was somehow lured into the House of Representatives today by a staff member from Obama spinning a pinwheel on a stick. And then, of course, we had the point of view by Dr. Ron Turner that it was all a Stephen Hawking-style stunt. And then, of course, we had Professor Emery Clayton, who I think, in all of his angst and anger and all of his irritation and anxiety, probably made the best point of all, which was that, with the injury that poor girl suffered, there she was, perhaps casting the correct vote. I don't think you can say that she did, but I think you can say this. You can say that she's every bit the hero that we make, well, any of our fighting men and women out to be.
Very dramatic.
What?
That was very dramatic. That was good.
Thank you, Robert. We'll be right back here with our news and information hour on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Keep it two.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, in search of what is ultimately the, I think, the numero uno job, and that is, that is to entertain, and that's what we do. What's up with the wave cart there, bud?
I don't know.
Well, machine two is not working because I wanted to hear our boots marching. There we go. Lockstep, man. Together into the future and right over the soft heads of those that are looking to eliminate our right to party. And just basically to have a good time, because that's all I want to do. I don't know about anybody else. And I know that there's all kinds of jobs to do, that we have to save our country. Oh, I want to do that. I mean, I'm there. I go to work every day, and I do what I can to stand up for the good name of America. But when the weekend comes, there's one reason why I'm doing all of that. What do you think the reason is?
Well, I mean, it's to make America, great.
Yeah, make America great. I want to do a lot of stuff, but the whole reason we're doing all that stuff is on the weekend to hit that sand out there.
Yeah, party.
Party. That's all I want to do. So we want to get the debt deal, and we want to make sure that people have health insurance, and we want to make sure that the country is secure from threats, domestic and foreign. And we want to make sure all of these things. These are the things we do as Americans. And we stand up for law and order, and we stand up for our neighbors, and we stand up for our family, and we love, and we cherish, and all that stuff. And all of that points to one thing and one thing. Only hit the beach, have a beer, party!
Yeah, oh, I understand that now.
Thank you! I didn't mean to spit on you, man, by the way.
That's right.
All right. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Welcome back to our program. Just a small note. It's a technical. It's a radio note. It's a broadcast note. I don't want to burden the listener too much with technical information, but I wanted just a note to the Federal Communications Commission, if you don't mind. Now, I know you guys aren't the brightest bulbs on a tree, and I know that most of you got your job because but let's just say you engaged in something questionable with someone, and it felt so good that they gave you the job. I understand, and I know that one hand washes the other. I get it. But is it possible, even though you're the laziest people in the world, you people at the FCC, even though you're some of the dumbest human beings that the world has ever known, even though you probably are some of the most corrupt individuals in the federal government today, is it possible for you to maybe hire somebody like a lawyer? Because I know some of you are lawyers, aren't you? I know, it's hard to remember, but wasn't there a time when you did that? And take a look at that standard agreement that you have those of us in the broadcast business sign. You know the one that talks about payola. Now, that's a very good agreement. There's nothing wrong with that, and I think we all should sign that. I think we should all be above board. We do not want to at all influence our programming surreptitiously under the table. We don't want to be taking money from people. This is a public trust broadcasting. We're licensed by the federals. I understand that. But do you think you guys could take that agreement and update the boilerplate language a little bit? Because you still have words in there like, if I host a sock hop. Now, we haven't hosted hops or sock hops, and you can't be talking about the beer kind of hops, because I don't know how you host beer hops other than to drink it. You think maybe you could hire some people to take the basic boilerplate language that is now 60-plus years old and update it a little bit? That's a project for you. That's something for you guys to do, besides go to your envelope once a week and look for your payoff. That's something for you guys at the FCC to do, besides having drinks with this broadcaster or that broadcaster, so you can take the envelope under the table and they get another radio station licensed. Oh, I know, yeah, you know, you had a busy week, but maybe you can update the language so that it's not 1843, and we're talking about shooting jackrabbits off of streetcars and things like that.
Are you kidding? You're not allowed to do that, huh?
We're not allowed to host a sock hop.
No, I mean shoot a jackrabbit on a streetcar.
I'm talking about just antiquated laws, bud. Do you understand?
Well, can you?
No, I can't shoot a jackrabbit off of a streetcar any more than you can.
No, but I mean, is it legal?
What do you mean, is it legal?
Well, I know it's probably tough to do, but...
No, it ain't legal. It's not legal, and it's probably tough to do.
But what was that, against the law or something?
It was a law on the books in the city of Los Angeles for, I think, up until the 1960s, until somebody looked at it and said, gee, I guess we don't need this law anymore.
And it said you can't shoot a jackrabbit.
It said you are not allowed to shoot jackrabbits off of moving streetcars. That's right. So I guess in those days, guys pulled their guns when they saw a jackrabbit and started shooting at them while they're taking the streetcar. I don't know.
That's bitching, man. I wish they could do it now.
You don't want to shoot no bunny, do you?
Well.
Anyway. So that's just a word of the wise there to our friends at the federal whatever it is. Now then. A lot of stuff to talk about, but here's one that I thought I would start the hour with. You know, I'm always talking about video games, and always saying, well, you know, video games are not the reason why we have violence. As a matter of fact, Americans have come a long way since the early 80s. The early 80s was the height of what I today personally refer to as the anti-gun hysteria that really, really gripped this country for a long time. The early 80s was a time when you couldn't watch TV. You couldn't turn the TV on without seeing a new documentary on what guns were doing. You couldn't turn the TV on without seeing a new show about the horror, the terror, the heartbreak of guns, and the heartbreak of psoriasis, but mostly the heartbreak of guns, 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 guns. Even today, mothers who were little children back then, who got that brainwashing, even today, those women who are now grown up, they still buy that. They still buy into it's the guns that make us violent. But fortunately, that thinking is on the way out. It's old hat. It's as dated as it is to say that alcohol abuse or drug abuse is a character flaw, that you're a bad person. What we know today is that people who are violent starting inside the skull. Is it something that they learned? Is it something that they were before they were born? Were they wired that way as they came into the world? We've gone far beyond guns and far beyond violent video games and far beyond violent TV shows. America has moved on, and thank God. Because we know now that violence, we know one thing that does not cause violence necessarily are those things. Guns, violent video games, and violent TV shows. We know that.
Well, I mean, unless it's like natural born killers.
Are you an idiot or something? Are you listening to what I'm saying, natural born? If anything, natural born killers was a comment on all of that TV violent stuff. All right, so thank God we've moved on, but unfortunately for the people of Norway, because they are relatively new to this phenomenon of spree killing or mass murdering, the idea of, and I know last week I was talking about this, I said a lot of this has to do, in my opinion, with a multicultural society bringing out extreme thinkers, and those extreme thinkers sometimes also are represented by just flat psychotic or psychopathic killers. There's too many blacks, you know. And there's very radical and strange and sick people out there, folks. And it ain't the TV shows doing it to them. It's the wiring in their heads. But the Norwegian people are going to have to learn this the hard way, I guess. Because what has happened is at least one retail chain in Norway has begun pulling violent video games in the wake of these killings. Now, I understand the reaction. I'm not putting it down. I'm not judging anybody. If this is what they feel is best, then this is what they feel is best. And I'm sure it's going to focus the country on the whole idea of violence. But it focuses the country in the wrong direction. It focuses the country in the wrong... If they want to deal with the idea of a... They want to deal with the problem of the mass murderer, the spree killer, they have to deal with it the right way. And they've started off sort of on the wrong foot. Coop Norway, one of the country's largest retailers, announced late last week they'd be removing 51 video games and weapon-like toys from their shelves in the aftermath of the Oslo Utøya shootings. Among the titles affected are Homefront, Sniper, Ghost Warrior, Counter-Strike, World of Warcraft, and four Call of Duty games. According to statements made to Norwegian newspaper Rogaland Avis, the ban on these games is apparently only temporary, but with no reinstatement date announced. Now, in the 1,500-page manifesto that he wrote, this Breivik jackass cited the use of violent video games. I spent 3 years writing Compendium 2083. During a 12-month period at the beginning, I played the World of Warcraft part-time, writes Breivik. Furthermore, he mentions Call of Duty as a suitable training option. Now, that's about as reliable and useful a piece of information as Ted Bundy saying that pornography is what turned him into a serial killer. Ted Bundy was a psychopath, so that means he was a liar. And being a liar, of course, he wants to control. And anybody that bought that, and there were a lot of people that did, especially some of these rather well-known religious television people. Well, see what Ted Bundy said? It was pornography. Ted Bundy was a manipulative psychopath. He'd say anything to keep the spotlight on him, and he did it right to the bitter end. Well, the same thing with his scum. The same thing with this scum. This guy can't sell. This guy cannot self-diagnose any better than Bundy would. Honestly, this guy is talking about World of Warcraft, and we all have the same stories. We all know nephews and sons and daughters and grandchildren, and we know kids by the bushel that play these games and are good, decent kids. So where does that leave you? Well, you see, Phil, if the person's already wired wrong, getting that video game out of there is... So you ban video games for the overwhelming majority of people that have nothing whatsoever wrong with them in order, in the off chance, to keep one psycho from being triggered. That guy's going to get triggered no matter what. You take the video game away from him, he'll get triggered by somebody laughing at him, spitting on him. telling him his shoes are the wrong color, telling him that his you-know-what is too small. Well, that would trigger most of us.
I know it would trigger me.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. It would. No, just joking.
Triggered me one time.
Shut up. So anyway, that's the story there of Norway. So they're getting off on the wrong foot there. And I, if there's anybody listening in Norway tonight to our broadcast, and I know that the government, the cabinet ministers, as well as a great many people in the Norwegian police do. I'm kidding. I don't know if they do. Don't go down the road. America, in so many ways, we have blazed the trail for so many things. We have blazed the trail for race relations. And there's nobody's going to convince me otherwise. And don't tell me about how it's better in some country. There isn't a country in the world that has had to deal with the realities of race relations the way America has. We've blazed the trail there. We've blazed the trail when it's come to violence in society. How are we free and how are we safe? How do we do that? America has fought that fight. I'm not saying we've won it, but we're much further down the road than anybody else. We've blazed the trail for so many things, the rights of the disabled, the rights of women, and yes, even the right of Bud Dickman to sit there picking his nose while I'm trying to finish.
I didn't know you were looking.
Would you do that somewhere else, please?
You said he had the right.
No, well, no, I take that back. No, you don't have the right. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more. Our number 877-876. Phil, don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. The Miami Dolphins' Brandon Marshall has revealed he has borderline personality disorder. What the hell is that? Plus, Representative Doug Lamborn referred to Obama as a tar baby. Is he racist? Is he stupid? Is he both? What's wrong with some of these people that are elected representatives and should know how to communicate publicly, should know a little bit about the culture? Are they all right and we're all just hypersensitive, or are some of them just asking for it? We'll talk about that coming back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Representative Lamborn he's alleged to have said working with Obama is like touching a tar baby. Let's see if that's what he said. Here is Lamborn.
Even if some people say, well, the Republicans should have done this or they should have done that, they will hold the president responsible. Now, I don't want to even have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby and you get it, you know, you're stuck and you're part of the problem now. And you can't get away. I don't want that to happen to us, but if it does or not, he'll still get, properly so, the blame because his policies for 4 years will have failed the American people.
Now, there's no doubt, you know, and let me tell you where I come from on a lot of this. I am probably more conservative than I am liberal, although I'm pretty liberal on some things, but that doesn't have anything to do with anything. There's no doubt that since Obama became president, there are more and more of these stupid bastards like this Lamborn that feel empowered. And I think that's what's going on here. I don't think he made a mistake. I don't think the guy didn't know this or that. He feels empowered because he's surrounded by the same stupid bastards that put him into office. He's surrounded by the same stupid scum that keeps him in office. Yeah, I said scum. I don't really care what anybody thinks because this is the kind of dumbass that we don't need. Why? Why do I say that? I'll tell you why. If you use the term tar baby and you try to tell me you don't know what that means, or you aren't sure what that means, you're a liar or you belong with the third graders. Either one of the two. No in between. No in between. See, this guy either belongs with third graders or he's a lying sack of garbage, which I think he is. Now, am I pissed off? Sorta. It's like this. I get so sick and tired of these dumbass white boys, and I'm one of them. I am. I mean, I understand them. I get it. I'm a white guy, so I get how whites think. And I know that it's not really that much of a mystery, maybe to black people, maybe it is. I don't know. White guy can say something like that and think, I'm not a racist. I understand how he says that. I understand how he thinks that. He doesn't hate anybody. What he doesn't understand is by his actions, by the things that he does in his life, by his intellectual laziness, by his intellectual dishonesty sometimes, by his complete and utter lack of understanding and knowledge of history. And that's the biggest crime that any elected representative can commit. To me, it's worse than the guy stealing. It's worse than a guy saying I'm gay or saying that he's not gay when he is. It's worse to me than a guy cheating on his wife. You want to throw somebody out of Congress? Do you really want to run people out of Congress? You really want to get rid of the garbage? Do you really? Get rid of the people that don't know their ass from a hole in the ground about the history of this country. And I'm not talking about the names of the capitals and when Abraham Lincoln was shot. I'm talking about the cultural history, the growth of this country, the beginnings, the roots, the people, and how this country grew. You want to get rid of the real scum. Those are the people, because they're slobs. They're lazy slobs. They think they can get by without understanding the wherefore and the why. They think that history is a real quick learn. They think it's a digest. They think it's like the driver's ed test, you know? If you got to get your license, let me just go in and I'll whip through it real fast. Oh, no. This guy, Lamborn, he's going to get reelected. I'm sure that people just love him and they understand he's not a racist. Well, I don't think he may not be a racist. He's an idiot. He's just an idiot. I don't care if he knows how to add two and two. I don't give a damn if he understands how much money we have to take out of the debt so that therefore we will have a workable debt in 10 years. And here's the, you know, where we cut this and that. I don't care what his feelings are and what ought to be cut and what ought to be kept. I don't give a damn whether he's a pro-military or he's an anti-military or if he believes in Obamacare or he doesn't. I don't care if he can stand there like the boring slob he probably is, in front of the people of the country or in front of Mr. President there in the Congress or in front of his distinguished fellow, whatever the hell they are, and run his fat, stupid mouth about the Tea Party or the progressives or all of these marvelous things. None of that matters. He's just an absolute criminally stupid man to talk about the President of the United States, a black man, and in the phrase use tar baby, because only an idiot, doesn't understand that that has a racial connotation going back many, many years in this country. Only an idiot. And if there's somebody out there right now, say, well, then I must be an idiot, Phil. Well, join the club. You are. I'm sorry that this guy is a congressman. It makes it all the more a disgrace. But like I said, if you really want to get rid of the slobs, get rid of the people in Congress that have no idea the history of this country, what it truly is. And that means the history of whites, blacks, Mexicans, Jews, all of us. And I mean the real history, because some of it isn't flattering for any of us. And some of it's cruel for people you may not think it was cruel for. And some of it is pretty easy for people you think might have had a tougher time. I mean, history surprises us, but it also lets us know, you know, where the bodies are buried. And it also lets us know, well, where the sore spots are. We'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up next, it's D.B. Cooper time, baby. That's right. They think they may have solved that one. Not
Phil Hendry. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. I wonder where they got, I'm serious, I don't want to belabor the point, but I wonder where they got the clip on this guy Lamborn saying the tar baby thing. Okay, they got it off a radio show, Kaplis and Silverman. Well, what did those two jackasses say when they heard that? They say anything? Who pointed out the fact that this dumbass Lamborn said tar baby like touching a tar baby? I mean, you either got to be the dumbest bastard that God ever let live past the cradle, or you think you're talking to a bunch of your homeboys. You know, we're all white people. We all get it, you know. I mean, I'm serious. I've been around white people like this. Well, see, every place, every face in the joint is pink. So let's start talking Tar Baby and N-word this and N-word that. Is that what this guy was? Is that how? Is this guy Lamborn? Is that what he's thinking? And what did this Kaplis and Silverman say? I don't know who made this into a news story, but it wasn't Kaplis and Silverman. Apparently, it was somebody else picked up on it. Kaplis and Silverman just sat there with their jaws hanging open. They were probably just all happy they got this guy on their show in the first place. Is that a Denver show?
Yeah, I think so.
The Denver show. So this guy represents Denver? What the hell is... I want some information now, okay? I'm not just sitting here talking again. Boy, I got some people. You know, you guys just don't get it. Will you give me some information on what the radio station is that these two jackasses work for? Where is this ass from, this Lamborn? What district is he from? What was the comment of the people? Now get on it. Let's go. Meanwhile, we got this. Vice President Joe Biden, KHOW 6:30 a.m. in Denver. You got a couple of morons working for you in the morning. What do you think about that one, K-How? We got people on the air that are so scared. You get some scumbag like this on talking Tar Baby. I guess I'm making a big deal, though, aren't I? I better not talk about this anymore. Oh, my goodness gracious. I may lose my Colorado affiliates. Vice President, let's go. Come on. When I ask a question, so help me God, I want an answer to the question. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know what 7:60 a.m. is, but I want people getting me the answers to these questions. What district does this guy work for? Vice President Joe Biden joined House Democrats in lashing Tea Party Republicans on Monday, accusing them of having acted like terrorists. And you know what? I'm not in the mood anymore. All of this. Get out of here. I'm so sick and tired of the American political scene. You know, basically my thing on radio, I'm an entertainer. I'm supposed to, you know, I like doing comedy. That's every time I get into these stories, first of all, the country... And the people that are communicating this information are so stupid, it boggles the imagination. And I'm going to get involved in a discussion of Tea Party and progressive and debt ceilings on talk radio? Talk radio? Do you think talk radio is doing anything but confusing people more? Do you think talk radio is doing anything but dragging people further into the mud? I'm trying to find out who Kaplis and Silverman are. This is a big freaking secret. Who the hell are these two guys that work on the morning show at K-How, and how is it they let this guy come on and say Tar Baby, and they didn't say anything? Is this guy, does he own the station? Is he buddies with the guy that owns the station? Is he buddies with the guy that is the general manager of the station? Are Kaplis and Silverman so dumb they don't know what Tar Baby means? One of them's a Jew.
Well, how do you know that?
Silverman.
Oh.
Although that doesn't have anything to do with Tar Baby, but...
Well, it's close.
It ain't even close. D.B. Cooper, the infamous airplane hijacker who vaulted into urban mythology by parachuting out of a jetliner over the Pacific Northwest with a $200,000 ransom, is back on the FBI's radar screen. Yeah, sure.
What do you mean, yeah, sure? Maybe it's him.
Hey, are you kidding me? I'll tell you something right now. D.B. Cooper, well, here, let me read the story. Cooper, whose case remains the only unsolved airline hijacking in U.S. history, became the stuff of legend on the night of November the 24th, 1971, when he jumped from a Boeing 727 into the skies between Portland, Oregon, and Seattle. He disappeared with the ransom that he had extorted, 10,000 $20 bills, which adds up to $200,000. The case has remained open, but the trail has been cold despite hundreds of tips, thousands of theories, and dozens of breakthroughs in scientific investigation. Now, the FBI, which has previously said that Cooper is likely D-E-A-D dead, is looking at fresh evidence, according to weekend reports in the media in Seattle, the epicenter of the story that seemingly can never die. The FBI's recent tip in the case was first reported by the Telegraph newspaper in London, always a reliable source. The British media. You must read the British media in order to get the latest on what's happening. No, you shouldn't. A testament to Cooper's international appeal, this story being in the Telegraph. Now, the tip provided to the FBI came from a law enforcement source who directed investigators to a person who might have helpful information on the suspect. FBI spokeswoman Ann Sedola Dietrich told the Seattle Times on Sunday, and I'm sure they were just breathless.
You don't believe it, huh?
Are you listening to this? The tip came from an investigator. But, of course, she called the new information the most promising lead we have right now, but cautioned that investigators were not on the verge of breaking the case. With any lead, our first step is to assess how credible it is, Sandola Dietrich told the Seattle Post-Intelligencer on Saturday. Having this come through another law enforcement agency, having looked it over when we got it, it seems pretty interesting. Now, the information includes an item that was sent to a lab in Quantico, Virginia for testing, she said. She did not provide specifics about the item or the man's identity. This is an FBI spokeswoman. She says the information includes an item that was sent to a lab in Quantico. She didn't provide specifics about the item or the man's identity. Dietrich was on vacation on Monday, according to a message on her FBI voicemail. Good time to take a vacation. It's not surprising that the Cooper story has spawned a dozen books and at least one movie. It combines elements of mystery, what happened to, adventure, man jumps from plane. But above all, the romance of an unknown person getting away with something and vanishing to possibly enjoy the ill-gotten gains. Here's where I must stress, ladies and gentlemen. No, he didn't get away with anything. No, he did not survive. How do I know? I know, and I say I know. Do I have proof? No, I don't. I'm just telling you, he didn't survive. They found the money, parts of the money, I should say, some part of the money, scattered to hell and gone over this area of forest. Okay? They found, I also believe, part of the bag that some of this money was, some of this money had been contained in or was stuffed into. The area that they found this money in had a large lake nearby, as well as a great many trees. It was very, very heavily forested. Not exactly an area that you want to come down in when you're in a parachute. Now, that's all that I have to go on. That's all that Phil Hendry has to go on. That's all that this dummy here, and I may be stupid, but I also know, folks, that the truth is, while they say truth is stranger than fiction, truth is never as exciting or as, it's never as extreme as we imagine it to be. Elvis is alive. Does that ring a bell? Hitler escaped to South America. You know, Jim Morrison's, these things are not true. All of the three men that I just mentioned are dead. They all died normal, you know, tragic, ugly, smelly deaths. And that's the end of that. And we may imagine and fantasize, but that's it. Because we don't have D.B. Cooper's body doesn't mean this guy didn't die. He called himself Dan Cooper. He purchased a one-way ticket to Seattle the day before Thanksgiving in 1971 at the Portland Airport counter at Northwest Orient Airlines. He was somewhere in his mid-40s, between 5'10" and 6'2". Well, hell, that pins it down. He wore a black raincoat, a dark suit, white shirt, and black necktie. Maybe it was a white necktie and a dark shirt. Oh, wait a minute, it was a red necktie, and he had on swimming trunks. Oh, I don't know. He could have passed for a funeral director or a banker with his mother-of-pearl tie pin. Or maybe it could have passed for a member of Congress, funeral director, member of Congress. He ordered a bourbon and water and lighted a cigarette. In those days, one could smoke on an airplane. He called over a stewardess and handed her a note printed in all capitals. I have a bomb in my briefcase. I will use it if necessary. I want you to sit next to me. You are being hijacked. By late afternoon, the plane had landed in Seattle and had been refueled and passengers were taken off. By evening, the ransom and parachutes were delivered, and the plane took off for Reno. At 8:13 p.m., the aircraft's tail section sustained a sudden upward movement, 8:13 p.m. in the evening. This is in November, so it's dark. When the craft landed at 10:15, authorities searched but Cooper was no longer on board. There's the story. So when we say that there is a promising lead in the D.B. Cooper case, I don't think it's a promising lead in we know where he is. I don't think that's it. I don't think it's a promising lead in, you know, we found the body. That's not it. The lead they're talking about is identifying who this man is. And by that, I mean his real name. If in point of fact, Dan Cooper is not his real name and D.B. Cooper, what he did for a living, where he's from, was he married, was he not? In other words, we'll get some background on this guy. And maybe, who knows, when you find out more about the person, you may find out more about where he possibly would be headed and where, in fact, he might have jumped out of the aircraft. You don't know. So that's what the FBI is talking about when they say promising lead. They're not going to arrest anybody because there's nobody to arrest. D.B. Cooper, in my opinion, died when he jumped out of the aircraft. He died from any number of reasons. Could have been any number of reasons. The chute didn't open. Or he got all kinds of stuff blown off of the chute itself. You know, if you talk to guys who survived these airdrops in World War II, in Normandy, the night before D-Day, those aircraft were knocked off course so badly that some of those guys had to jump out of the aircraft not at 100 miles an hour. They were jumping out of it at 200 miles an hour. And they weren't jumping out of it at X number of feet. They were jumping out of it lower. So all kinds of stuff happened to them. If you listen to them, they say, I lost my knife. I lost this. I lost that. I lost all kinds of bags. I lost all kinds of stuff. Everything flew off of me because that blast of air is so strong, you jump out, and the next thing you know, all you can do is open the chute, or at least wait the prerequisite number of seconds to open the chute. And in some cases, these guys didn't know how many seconds that would be because they didn't know how far off the ground they were. But the fact is, the speed itself was so jarring that all kinds of things were lost by these guys other than the parachute itself. It's possible that the money was lost within seconds of D.B. Cooper jumping out of that aircraft. Hence, they found that money in that area. Where did he land? I don't know. Finding the money in the area that they found the money, and if he lost it when he lost it, and then he landed someplace else, he could have still landed in a very heavily forested area. Nothing but trees, Jack. That's something that a parachute is going to get hung up in pretty easy. And some of those trees are pretty tall. And you can be hanging there for a long-ass time before anybody sees you, maybe years, maybe forever, until finally the chute tears away and nothing but a skeletal remain drops to the ground in pieces scattered hither and thither, and it's going to take the greatest Boy Scout troop in the history of man on this planet to find anything. If the guy survived the jump, the guy survived the jump without the money. No money. Now that, in and of itself, would probably make it easy for the guy to disappear. I got no money. Boom. They ain't going to find me because I got no evidence on me. I lost that, man. I don't know. Maybe without that money, this guy was so desperate, maybe he just pulled out whatever he had and either blew his brains out or slit his own wrists or something. Now, the FBI, they ain't got D.B. Cooper in the flesh or in the bone, but they may have an idea as to who he is and or who he was, and that would be interesting. That would be interesting to find out. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here coming up. Montana's prison system defends their English-only policy, and the ACLU sues. Well, we won't be reading that story, will we? Well, maybe. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, with our blog, our high-definition video, our podcast, our merchandise, our legacy CDs, coffee mugs. It's all there at philhenryshow.com.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio
for Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Oh, all right. So now you think we're a couple of dumbasses.
Well, what are you guys talking about?
He's talking about, Rant said that some guys found, some guys had D.B. Cooper's money in 72 and tried to use it to extort some, you know.
Yeah, well, how do you know that wasn't D.B. Cooper?
I think they found that dough.
Yeah, right. You don't know they found that money or that D.B. Cooper, too.
Oh, are you crazy, man? So D.B. Cooper, now that he got away with one of the biggest hijackings in history, I know what I'll do. I'll try to extort some money from people.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
No, I'm not. I'm an idiot. He said that wasn't D.B. Cooper. You don't know.
I'm thinking that it's pretty sure that wasn't D.B. Cooper using that money. Those guys found that money, or more to the point, they got a hold of that money from people that found it. People working on behalf of law enforcement found that money. These guys got a hold of a couple of bills. Okay?
Yeah, they got a hold of a couple of bills, man. You don't know.
Well, you don't know it was D.B. Cooper. I mean, it's far more likely my explanation than your explanation. Far more likely.
Why?
Because D.B. Cooper, man, isn't going to land with all that dough, and then he's going to say, I know, why don't I extort some money out of people? That cat's going to lay low, man. He is not going to do that. Okay? Here's the story. In February 1980, an 8-year-old boy named Brian Ingram, vacationing with his family on the Columbia River, about 9 miles downstream from Vancouver, Washington, and 20 miles southwest of Ariel, uncovered 3 packets of the ransom cash, significantly disintegrated, but still bundled in rubber bands as he raked the sandy riverbank to build a campfire. FBI technicians confirmed that the money was indeed a portion of the ransom, 2 packets of $100 bills each, and a 3rd packet of 90, all arranged in the same order as when given to Cooper.
Yeah, but that ain't 1972.
They found money up until 1980. They were fine. And this was buried under sand, man. This kid was 9 miles downstream from Vancouver, Washington, on the Columbia River. So this cat, he hadn't even made it out of Washington State. And he was on his way to Reno. It was 3 packets of ransom money. So he hadn't even taken this money out of its pack. I mean, this guy, I'm telling you right now, D.B. Cooper's dead.
Yeah, but when you say he's dead, I know he didn't have the money.
But think of it this way. If the guy lost the dough like this, I mean, and this, I'm telling you, this guy lost all the money. When did he lose it? I say he lost it as soon as he jumped out of the aircraft. The wind blast was that heavy that it knocked the duffel bags or whatever the hell it was he was carrying away from him. So he loses this money. Because this dough, the way it's being found, it's all, I mean, it's, what's that music I'm hearing, by the way?
Somebody practicing a harmonica in another studio.
Someone practicing harmonica in another studio. Well, I know what it is. It's that C-SPAN dude right there, that guy that's playing the fiddle.
That ain't a fiddle, the violin.
I mean, a violin. Think about it, man. If this guy loses the money seconds after he jumps out of the aircraft, which I believe he did, where did they find it? And how did they find it? They found some of this money disintegrated. It was still in the packets. It's laying all over the place in a heavily forested area. Not in Reno. It sure as hell ain't anywhere that D.B. Cooper can use it. So he lost it. Now the question is, what happened to him? Okay?
Yeah, what do you say he's dead?
I say he's dead because once he lost that money, okay, well, this guy is he's out of luck. That money is gone. Now the dude, when's he going to spring the chute? You know, when had he planned on springing the chute? I guess he figured he knew there was an area down there that he'd be able to land in safely. I don't know where that would be. Well, the only place that they found that money or any other part of the gear this guy had was in an area where you cannot land in a parachute without getting hung up on trees that are hundreds of feet high, okay?
Maybe he knew how to fly the parachute like James Bond did in Quantum of Solace.
In Quantum of Solace? I had to belt you just for saying that stuff. Anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rantz, our technical director, Dan Northcraft, John Werick, and Fred Scotty, our associate producers. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Maybe he learned how to fly like that guy in Quantum of Solace.
No, James Bond.
James Bond.
Yeah, James Bond.
Jane Bond.
Phil Hendry.
James Bond.